The holiday season where there's a strong renaissance in the cities and towns of western Wisconsin. It must be the water or maybe the air, but in arts and culture, there's none to compare. Welcome to Spectrum West, and if you've already participated in our winter membership drive, thank you. If not, please consider participating. The easiest way is to become a monthly sustainer, whatever your budget can handle. Call 888-202-2552 or go online at WPR.org, and thank you. This week on Spectrum West, the Master Singers prepare for their always anticipated holiday concert. Dr. Gary Schwartzoff is here. Jim Oliver and Arthur Grothy discuss the latest production from the UW-Eau Claire Theater Department, opening soon. Tom Larson teaches dance at the Phipps Center in Hudson. We'll learn what it takes and what it provides. Poet Thomas R. Smith and friends present their annual John Lennon tribute in River Falls this Sunday. And here is where we initiate the conversations. It has happened every year, and this is number 40. It's Arts West, and the exhibit's home is the L.A. Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire. We asked Issa Small, a librarian with programming and communications specialties, to pay us an informative visit. How about a refresher course? This started in the fall of 79, became a spring show after that.
Yes, and it's been held annually ever since then, and this will be the 40th Wisconsin Arts West.
And usually when decades are observed, something special happens. Sometimes when things reach 40, they notice wrinkles. any special wrinkles this year? But you are celebrating for the 40th. You're giving people a break.
Yes. So in the past, we've charged a small entry fee just to kind of cover some of our costs. But this year there will be no fee to enter. It is 40 and free, at least.
40 and free. That's a slogan.
It is.
I'd buy a t-shirt if it said it on it. Now, entries are flowing in as we speak. The deadline is January 14th. Talk a bit about the entry process so artists out there can feel like they know what they have to do if they haven't done anything yet.
Sure. That part changes a little bit every year. 40 years ago, you would have actually brought your piece to the library to be judged. We do things a little differently now. It is now all online, so you can upload digital images of your work, just a very brief information, description, title, etc., and that's all done online. You can do that on our website. Then the jurors will actually review them that way. They'll make the initial selections about what goes into the show digitally, but then we always have the juror travel and see the work in person to award those prizes.
The website is ecpubliclibrary.info/art. That's where you can get your online entry form.
Yep. If folks have any problems filling out that form, our staff at the reference desk are always happy to help.
And the parameters for entrance, 18 and older, Wisconsin resident, the art must have been produced since January 1st of 2017. Just because I'm ignorant, why ask people to have something that's no more than 2 years old?
Well, because we have a lot of great artists in this area and a lot of great art, and we want to make sure that Arts West is bringing forth what's fresh, what's happening, what's new in the Valley art scene.
Okay. I'm not ignorant anymore.
Yeah.
Now, the judges for the 40th are an artistic couple, Franklin and Lynn Zetzman. He's a UW-Eau Claire grad. He teaches art independently, sculpture, ceramics, and drawing. She has over 3 decades teaching K through 12 art in the Fox River Valley, now directs a gallery at UW Fox Valley. Tell me a little bit about, if you know, how judges are on your radar. How do they come into your radar for potential inclusion?
Great question. We do have a visual arts committee at the library, and that's made up of local artists, art educators, those working in the arts in the area. We rely on them for suggestions, but we also, perhaps one of our greatest wealth of options comes from past jurors that we've had that we've liked working with. We'll ask them for recommendations. This year, the couple did happen to come from one of our art committee members' recommendation.
Issa Small is in the studio with us. She's a librarian, and she's a specialist in programming and communications service for the L.E. Phillips Memorial Public Library. 40th Arts West Juried Art Exhibit is what we're talking about, happening in April, beginning in April, April 7th through May 28th. But as we said earlier, you can submit until January 14th. We've talked with other people involved with L.E. Phillips about the expansion and renovation project going on. I think we're in a survey period right now, but for a little bit yet,
yep.
I think.
It's actually been extended through December 14th.
Okay. So let's say everything goes swimmingly. Would that expansion affect the art exhibition abilities of the library?
We aren't at a stage, there haven't been any specific plans or drawings, but certainly the intention is to keep our public performance art in the mix, as well as our programming space, expand that. And it's certainly at the top of my list of considerations that I'll be advocating for. Yeah. Absolutely.
The gallery, quote unquote, at L.A. Phillips is perceived as being in the mezzanine.
Mm-hmm.
But where else do you display art? You have staircases? And...
Yep. We do have our, as you mentioned, our main display areas in the mezzanine on the second floor. We also have some gallery space just below that on the first floor. And for larger shows like Arts West, we kind of spill over into that little area in the stairwell between the two spaces.
Okay. The perks for people who are lucky enough to be recognized in this exhibit are some handsome monetary prizes, but there is also prestige in being recognized within such a long-standing competition. And I felt a little weird putting the word competition in. It feels like competition when you're trying to get into an exhibit. Then I thought to myself, when an artist creates a work with the only intent being recognition, some believe they kind of jump the tracks a little bit.
Yeah, that's a big topic. I don't know if I'm prepared to discuss that.
But I'll talk about that with some artists. Yeah. 40th Arts West Juried Art Exhibit, it's coming up in the spring. Don't forget, if you want to submit some art, January 14th is the deadline. Issa Small, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Jim Oliver and guest, teaching the art of dance and the Master Singers annual gift, all coming up on Spectrum West. And was I speaking of gifts? You know, you might rely on the Ideas Network programs in 2019, so please help us get off to a good financial start in the new year with a pledge of anything you can afford to WPR by phone at 888-202-2552 and online at WPR.org. Spectrum West audiences always come through. Thanks. You know, this is the time of year for two observances, the holiday season and the annual John Lennon tribute in River Falls. Poet Thomas R. Smith and friends are ready for Sunday's event. So you've been doing this 7 years. It always happens in early December.
Well, it's time to coincide with the anniversary of Lennon's death date, which is December 8th in 1980. So we're at the 38th anniversary right now. There's a man in the Twin Cities, Curtis A., rock and roller, who's been doing this from year one. We used to go and hear his show in the cities when we lived up there. And since I've been in River Falls for many years, we don't get there quite as often, and I thought, you know, the poets should be covering this too, and I'm a poet and a hobby musician, so 7 years ago we started our hybrid version, music and poetry.
Mm-hmm. Over the span of 7 years, how has your party changed? You've added some musicians, I know.
It gets bigger every year. We've got quite a crew this year, and including a piano player for the first time. We're really going to be able to do that good old piano rock and roll. I'm looking forward to it. I was also going to say that there's an interesting connection in my mind, anyway, between this event and the Christmas season. The original murder date of Lennon was such a blow in early winter. It was so demoralizing that it cast a shadow over the holidays, and I think the memory of that still lingers. Celebrating his music and having it be a joyful event instead of a mournful event is a way of opening up another pathway of joy toward the holidays themselves. We always feel better after we've done this and find the oncoming of winter more bearable. So I'd say there's a connection there.
And you get pretty good turnout.
No, we usually do, yeah.
Give us the particulars.
River Falls Public Library, Sunday, December 9th, approximately 1:30 to 3:30 p.m.,
okay.
Give or take, song or two,
mm-hmm.
or poem or two.
And be prepared to sing along.
That's our hope. Everybody loves this music. I have to also say that this isn't one of those note-for-note reconstruction things. This is not impersonation, but interpretation.
Oh, okay.
I always say that we aim somewhere in between rock and roll and jug band music with a little Pete Seeger thrown in for good measure.
All right, good. Whenever I have a poet on the phone or in the studio, I don't let him or her leave without giving us something they have written. What do you have for us? Anything?
Oh, that's a good policy, and a little birdie told me that you were interested maybe in having a Christmas poem.
Oh, that fits.
I don't read these at the gig, but I'm going to read you one or two from a book in progress right now that I hope to see published in the next couple of years.
Wonderful. So we get a preview.
You get a preview. That's right. So this is called Bird's Nest in the Christmas Tree, and it's based on a little piece of folklore that if you find a bird's nest in your Christmas tree, it's good luck for the coming year. Bird's Nest in the Christmas Tree. Near the trunk of our white pine, we found the nest cradled in a tight crook of branches. They say a bird's nest in one's Christmas tree portends luck in the coming year. Our first luck then was that the tree farmers hadn't discovered and removed the nest, their usual practice. The size of my hands cupped together, the nest joins in its loose weave, leaves, thin twigs, grasses, and orange needles, perhaps from its host. Imagine first opening your eyes to the light at the heart of a pine, glossy and green-filtered inside its airy, feathered cone. Beneath the showy human decorations, the nest lies delicate and steady against a hub of spoking limbs, as if the calm soul of the busy holiday, still point that reproves our anxious turning, low birthplace of those who inherit the sky.
Love it. Yeah, and I've had a couple of trees in my lifetime that had nests in them, and I remember hearing that folklore and believing it. As you noted, they're usually little delicate nests, which I love that.
A beautiful little nest.
We're ready for number two.
Number two, this is called Caroling with Crows, and this is from a couple of years ago, Christmas Eve 2016. We were with some relatives caroling in the Phillips neighborhood of South Minneapolis, and if you've been around there in the wintertime at dusk, you know sometimes there are hundreds and hundreds of crows. I don't know where they come from or where they go. It was fantastic. This is called Caroling with Crows. Some people came out to greet us. Others held back. Facades preserving a solemn silence, whether of privacy, vacancy, or sorrow. Yet smiles escaped our little roving chorus, whether for our stumbles over the carol's verses in Spanish or for having lit a few faces in windows and doorways of South Minneapolis. Lifting my gaze from twilight pavement and shadowed porches, I'm not sure when it happened. I suddenly saw them, crows, hundreds, maybe thousands, in the burnt orange dusk, surrounding us all in all directions, clustered crows enough to releaf the bare trees, the great black choir lofts of crows, their dark notes strung on staves of the sky. Overhead, too, crows everywhere, flapping through the lurid, smudged air like ash from some vast burning, which perhaps was, after all, simply the crow's Christmas, their excitable cawing and clacking, a kind of caroling above our earthbound song, urging us out from our less visible darkness to recognize also those angels of the nearer heavens.
What a great title for a poem, Caroling with Crows.
Caroling with Crows, another world that we were in that evening.
Thomas R. Smith, thank you. Have fun on Sunday. Thanks for the verse. And be sure to let us know whenever your new stuff comes off the presses.
Thank you, Al. You'll be one of the first to know. I appreciate it very much.
It's Sunday, River Falls, Library, 1:30 p.m., lower level community room. Remembering John Lennon and mates, as they say. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony, teaming with the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra for a holiday concert December 7th, 7:30 p.m., and December 8th at 2 at the Pablo Center at the Confluence, pablocenter.org. Support also comes from Marquardt Toyota, dedicated to providing an enjoyable, stress-free buying process with welcoming facilities located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or at marquardttoyota.com. Support also comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, presenting multiple exhibitions annually while home to art inspired by water, including Washington Crossing the Delaware by artist Emmanuel Leitze, mmam.org, the website there. You know, often the hardest part of dancing is convincing yourself to walk out onto the dance floor. Usually once there, it's a ball. But the process can search your soul, your ego, and your courage. Well, thankfully, there are people like Tom Larson, who teaches dance at the Phipps in Hudson.
I started 15 years ago at the Phipps. There was a lady named Lynn Lammer, and she was a Hudson resident, and she knew me from the dance community. She had been dancing a lot longer than I have, so she actually started the program at the Phipps. She was teaching one class, beginning ballroom. Lynn was a dancer, but she wasn't a dance instructor, so sure. She had wanted me to help her with teaching classes. I started teaching with her, and she had some health problems, and unfortunately, she passed away 2 months after we started together at the Phipps. I pulled my students aside, and I said, what do you think we should do? And we all agreed that Linda was a firecracker and we should continue on. So we started with 4 or 6 people in the class. Now we have 4 classes at the Phipps: beginning, intermediate, intermediate 2, and advanced. Plus with the dances and other events I do there, because of her, we knew we should continue on.
Congratulations on taking the baton and running with it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was all up to Linda. It was great.
Who should consider taking your lessons? People who know nothing about it and have 2 left feet, or people who haven't danced in a while, or people who have a big function coming up? I bet you get all kinds.
Yes. People come from the studio for many different reasons. I didn't really dance much as a child. It started a little bit later in life. I don't think I knew a lot about things, so I kind of turned to self-improvement ideas and books as a kid, and it kind of helped me change my life in a certain direction as an adult. I wanted to be more like a counselor, motivational speaker. Mm-hmm. And somebody had told me there was this dance training, a dance studio. And I remember thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll try that. It could be a stepping stone to something better. And so I became a dance instructor. But people started coming to me with genuine thank yous. You know what, Tom? Our relationship has really changed because of you. Mm-hmm. Or they said that I got a lot more confidence because of you. I started to realize that dancing was a lot more than just some silly steps. I thought it was going to be a stepping stone or something else, but it really was making a difference in people's lives. With everyone I teach, whether it be group classes or private lessons or whatever function they show up for, I tell people that you're going to hear music everywhere you go for the rest of your life. You may have to learn a few dancing tips and then feel like you can actually get up and dance. And then the benefits of dance are endless. They come, they have fun. It's healthy for them, for the mind and the body. It's very social. And along with that, yeah, their confidence and everything else, relationships improve. With the Phipps, I have people who show up in group classes, and of course, there's exercise and it's healthy and everything, but they actually will gain friendships. They're hanging out years later and going to a New Year's Eve and stuff together because the friendship that they've built up throughout the classes.
I'm imagining people listening to the radio saying to themselves, you know, I don't dance as well as I'd like to, or I am one of those people that feels intimidated and self-conscious on the dance floor. Give us an idea what a typical class is like, the first class. How do you break the ice with them?
Well, what I try to do is make sure that I'm finding out why they're coming. Some people want to be serious. Some people want to be more laid back. Mm-hmm. But when they show up to the classes, I always start with beginning steps, and then each week we review and we add more steps. So at the FIPS, for example, when we do group classes, they show up, they may know nothing. There's a beginning class for that. And then throughout the weeks, I don't want to just pile a bunch of moves on to people and say, well, there you go, good luck. I want them to not only have a good time in class, but actually be able to use these dances. So each week we review, we add more steps, and throughout the weeks they gain their confidence. And then we also have dance parties a couple times a month, so they can show up on a Saturday night. They can show up and dance to music for a couple hours and actually use their skills there.
So just like going to school, is there homework? You must suggest that they you must suggest that they go home and work on what it is you just went through at class.
Well, yes, that would be nice or helpful, but a lot of times their lives are busy. So even if they don't practice at home, I feel like we get a lot accomplished in the classes, and they'll be fine. If they do some extra dancing or homework, as you call it, that would be nice. A lot of times people don't, but it does benefit them when they do. So, yeah.
Do you get a lot of couples that come and take the classes together?
Absolutely. I get a lot of couples, you know, sometimes may have even had a bad experience 10 or 20 years ago, and they took a class, and they're like, oh, well, that was uncomfortable. We'll never do that again. But the way I teach is different. I have a different method, and people really like the way I present the information, the pace that I teach. And if you've seen my Google reviews, I have excellent reviews there, so you can read up on those. But the way I teach is a little bit different, and I kind of match people's personalities and their speed as they come in, how fast, how slowly they learn. And as couples, you guys feel like you go anywhere in a dance, on vacation, on the cruise, at the bar on the weekend. So it could be something that people take very seriously, but it could also be that they just want to learn some steps to be able to get up when they do hear some music at some point.
Okay. Tom Larson, owner of the Ballroom and Wedding Dance Studio. That's in the Twin Cities. Tom also teaches dance, specifically ballroom and Latin, at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson, and has been doing that a number of years, 15 years to be exact. Now, I think I told you when we were setting up this interview, my parents suggested the five of us, me and my four siblings, take dance lessons. There was a couple in our hometown who were very, very good dancers. They gave private lessons, so we went. And within those classes, we learned what we perceived as basics that would benefit us and we'd be able to use in coming years. We learned things like the waltz, and we learned the foxtrot, the two that I remember, but I'm sure there were more. I'm old enough, I think they said, well, let's have some fun now. Let's do the twist. Cool. I guess these guys are neater than we thought they were going to be. So what types of steps do you work with people?
Well, when people come in, I try to find out what their vision is, what they want from dancing. So if they come in for privates or groups, I kind of can help direct them where they're going to go. For example, they come in for a wedding dance, making them memorize a lot of steps and make it complicated would not be as good for them. I get people who call me a week before the wedding and need to learn something. So I have different methods for different people. I'm going to take an approach that would be very simple. They won't have to count steps or memorize them. I'll show them some steps that they can do and just think about the quality that they have. And also, I might even show wedding couples, you know, here's the moves you can choose from, and they can help pick and choose. So that's one method. It's kind of quick and fast. If someone says, we need to dance this weekend, I would say, let's take that approach. But the other ones, like at the FIPS, we learned rumba, waltz, swing, hustle, cha-cha, salsa. I teach about 20 different dances. Even in that approach, I try to cover the dances that are most useful. People that come to me might want to just use them at a wedding reception or the bar. So I do teach all the dances like tango, but in some cases, tango may not be useful for them. So instead of wasting time with teaching them dances they won't learn or use, I will teach them dances that they will use more often, like hustle, merengue, rumba, and then they can branch out later.
I use the term two left feet, humorous way of somebody admitting they can't dance. Can anybody dance? Can everybody dance? Let's say that someone has just zero sense of rhythm. Can you work with them and develop that, or do you tailor-make a system of teaching them to dance in such a way that they can fake it?
Absolutely. Anyone can learn to dance. Like I said, I learned a little bit later in life. I didn't dance as a child. That should give people hope, saying, oh, you know what? Well, I was an athlete, or I was just a hunter or whatever, and whatever you did in the past, you can learn. If they can't hear the beat, I can take them aside and say, they might say something like, oh, I'm tone deaf or something. And then like, nope. I get them to hear the beats. And once you hear the beats, it's like riding a bike. You never really lose it. So those people who struggle with hearing beats or rhythm, that can be taught. I definitely can teach that in private lessons for sure.
Cool. Sounds like you're the right guy to teach dance lessons. Do you get all age groups?
Absolutely. Mostly adults, but younger people will come in and really enjoy it too. Dances like swing, hustle, salsa are really interesting for people. I do have a story I found interesting. I had a lady call me up. She was 80 years old, and she had said, hey, I haven't danced in 30 years. Can you help me out? So I would go up to her house once a week, and we would do a lesson. We started out very simple. We started with very slow waltzes, and she had to sit down every 30 seconds or 60 seconds to catch her breath.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go up there once a week, and after a couple months, what happened was it was very eye-opening. We started going to these senior dances with her that are located in different places. And after a few months, we started doing waltzes, foxtrots, swings, and polkas. And she ended up dancing a whole hour doing this.
That's a great story. Tom Larson, I appreciate you taking the time and fielding my questions here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Al.
There are lessons scattered throughout the year. It's best to visit the website to find the one that best fits. TheFIPS.org is the website. Hey, with your help, we're waltzing through the winter membership drive here at WPR, where old friends and new members provide the assets we need to make 2019 another good year. Give what you can. Everything helps by calling 888-202-2552 or go online at WPR.org. Gracias. Merci. Danke, you get the idea. And now it's Oliver time. And get this, Jim's going to talk about Dungeons and Dragons this week. But first, here's a list of what's on stage in West Wisconsin this holiday season.
The best Christmas pageant ever will be staged Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, December 14th, 15th, and 16th in the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. It will be presented for group audiences weekdays, December 10th through the 21st. Miracle on 34th Street, a production of the Festival Theater of St. Croix Falls, will play through December 24th at the Franklin Square Black Box Theater. A Christmas Carol will be staged by the Menominee Theater Guild Friday through Sunday in the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. Theater in the Woods of Shell Lake will stage A Nice Family Christmas today, if you're listening on Thursday, through Sunday in the Erica Kwan Memorial Theater. Sorry Wrong Chimney will be staged Fridays and Saturdays, continuing through January the 5th at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The River Falls Community Theater will present The Best Christmas Pageant Ever Friday and Saturday and next Friday and Saturday in the Unitarian Society in River Falls. A Little House Christmas will be staged by the Eau Claire Children's Theater Friday and Saturday and December 14th to the 16th in the Oxford Theater. The Northern Star Theater of Rice Lake will present A Charlie Brown Christmas Friday through Sunday and the following Friday through Sunday. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will present Closed for the Holidays today, if you're listening on Thursday, through Sunday and the next Thursday through Sunday in the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. The Phipps Children's Theater will perform Bah Humbug, Rouge's Christmas Carol, Fridays and Saturdays through December 16th in the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson.
There you go. And you know, Jim's beat is the literature we're reading and the amateur theater we're patronizing. Let's see what's on the menu this week. Jim, the microphones are still hot.
Thanks, Del. Dungeons and Dragons is a game familiar to most fantasy lovers. The game, popular in both video and board game formats, offers a role-playing fantasy synonymous with the overly intellectual, or nerds sometimes. Anyway, even the most experienced Dungeons & Dragons player probably hasn't seen it portrayed on the stage. Well, that issue can be resolved by seeing She Kills Monsters, a play written by Vietnamese-American playwright Quy Nguyen. She Kills Monsters received its off-Broadway debut at the Flea Theater in New York City in 2011. The University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Theater will present She Kills Monsters opening next Tuesday and continuing through Sunday, December 16th in the Pablo Center at the Confluence in Eau Claire. Here to talk about the show is the director, Arthur Grothy, Assistant Professor of Theater and Artistic Director at UW-Eau Claire.
It's a pleasure to be back.
Well, how was this play selected?
Well, as we looked through our season, we were looking for something that gave us the chance to use the Jamp Theater, the black box space, in a new and creative way. And we were looking for something that had fantastical elements to it that we could explore. And this play certainly has that. Creating the world of Dungeons & Dragons on stage is a bit of a challenge. Mm-hmm. We've set the play up in arena format, so the audience will be sitting all around the actors. That also allows us the ability to use projectors in a number of different locations to help set the stage and set the locations. It also gave us a chance to have the students work on some fight choreography because they have to battle kobolds and beholders and Tiamat, and that's something that we have not been able to do a ton recently, so chance to have some fun in the space.
Tell us about the playwright, whose name I think I butchered pretty badly when I...
Queen Nguyen is a...
Queen Nguyen, that's easy enough.
He started at Ohio University and was actually told by his professors that the style of theater he wanted to do was better suited for film because he really liked epic battles and pop culture references, and academia was not necessarily having that. But he felt strongly about it. He got together with several other alumni, started their own theater company in New York, and really worked to produce plays that he wanted to see, the ones that elevated some of those pop culture references, used them in a way to tell a creative story. He's written a number of plays that all sort of track at least one strong female heroine throughout, and the journey for that character is usually one of self-discovery and facing some own inner demons along the way. And those demons can then get sort of a fantastical life on stage because of the scenarios and the circumstances he sets up.
You know, I think perhaps before we get too much further, you ought to appeal to people like me who haven't the foggiest idea what Dungeons and Dragons is all about.
Well, they're on there at 6th or 7th edition, I think, now. Mm. It is, in many ways, quite a wonderful game to play today when we don't interact with people, and so much of what we do is living online and creating sort of a false narrative sometimes about our life. Dungeons & Dragons did that, but it involved you communicating and working with other people.
Seems to me there was side effects of playing Dungeons & Dragons.
I think if anything, it gives your imagination the ability to exercise, the ability to play, to create and inhabit characters that give you the chance to do things you can't do normally. My guess is that was probably a little bit of a puritanical look at it to say that this is because they're dragons, because they're monsters, they must be inherently evil. Mm-hmm. And in essence, the game teaches you teamwork, problem solving, and helps you to engage with other people in the room to mm-hmm. solve these problems. Okay. And it's sort of had a resurgence with Stranger Things because it was a key component of that Netflix television show. And it harkens back, I think, to in some ways a simpler time when there wasn't quite so many distractions.
Uh-huh. He is Arthur Grothy, who is Assistant Professor of Theater, among other things, at UW-Eau Claire, and director of the play She Kills Monsters. Well, let's talk about the play. What's it about?
It starts off with a very sad premise, and the play's not sad. It's actually quite funny, a number of components of it. But the opening premise is that there is a character, Agnes, who has lost her younger sister and her parents in a car crash. Her younger sister was the one who was really into Dungeons & Dragons. As she's cleaning out the house, getting rid of some old boxes, she comes across her sister's Dungeons & Dragons journal and decides to find somebody to help her play it. And then her sister appears as a character in the game she's playing. And so they have to take this journey together along with characters her sister has created based off of friends and people she knew in school. The older sister, Agnes, really gets to work through that grieving process through the course of playing the game in some really crazy scenarios. Like they have to fight a big gelatinous cube at one point, and that cube transforms into Agnes's boyfriend, who Tilly didn't really like. And so Agnes now has to slay her boyfriend. But it gives them a forum and a vehicle to work through some of those family issues that they didn't get a chance to when Tilly was alive.
How many in the cast?
We have 16 in the cast, including a couple people that are understudies. And so one of the nights of the roles will be a little bit different because the understudies will go on the Wednesday night performance. But throughout the rest of the run of the show, they are playing many of the monsters that they have to fight. So they're always there. They're just switching out on one night.
How do you handle the setting with all this fighting you're talking about?
It's been an interesting challenge because we set it up to be in the round, which if you've ever done fight choreography, you know that makes it trickier because now we have to think about a lot more angles. So we started with fight rehearsals. We spent the first probably week of rehearsal just working on how do you punch somebody? How do you kick somebody? How do you swing the sword? How do you manipulate this staff or this large axe? And actors have been really great about diving into that work and having a great time with it. So it's been a lot of drilling and a lot of practice. And we will move into the space next week and be able to actually do some rehearsing in the physical space, hopefully by the end of next week. So we've been doing our best to anticipate the problems. I'm sure there are things we don't quite yet see.
Well, I always like to ask university people about the educational component that goes into a show like this. What kind of experiences? You almost answered the question already, I think, about how to fight and how to punch each other out and all that stuff without killing each other. Talk a little bit about the educational side of this.
Well, I think there's that component, the fight choreography. That was one of the things we wanted to look at. It also, from a technical standpoint, there'll be four projection screens, two additional projectors for the floor. That gives our technical students a great opportunity. Staging a space in the round is certainly much different than in a traditional proscenium theater style. That is a whole new experience for our students, and how do we block, how do we work with that, is a great opportunity for them to learn. The other component is that the core of the story is a truthful, honest connection between characters. So how do you as an actor bounce between, I'm playing this outlandish moment where we're larger than life and there are lights going and sound going and smoke going and we're fighting, and then be able to switch gears into a very tender moment. That ability, I think, is great for actors to learn. And how do I manage those different styles?
Well, what's coming up for the rest of this season at the university?
So in the second semester, we will have The House of Blue Leaves by John Guare, and then Don Giovanni in full Italian in the RCU Theater.
The play is She Kills Monsters, a production of the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Theater. The show opens next Tuesday and continuing through Sunday, December 16th in the Pablo Center at the Confluence in Eau Claire. And we've been talking to the director, Arthur Grothy. Thanks so much for coming back to talk to us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. So nice to be with you. Support for WPR comes from Art Z Gallery in Amory. December features mixed media artists Julie Adams, Judy Paulson, and Han Hoosman. Fiber artist Loretta Peterson is also featured. ArtZGallery.org. Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony teaming with the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra for a holiday concert December 7th. 7:30 p.m. and December 8th at 2 at the Pablo Center at the Confluence, pablocenter.org. It's one of the most anticipated concerts of each year's holiday season, this being their 26th. I like to say the holidays don't officially start until I hear the master singers proclaim it. Well, they're going to do that again in their annual Lessons and Carols performances. This year, the Huron Carol is featured. Gary Schwartzoff and I had an appointment to talk about it earlier this week. As I read the title, the Huron Carol threw me a little. It seemed different than the title of years past. Of course, it's Lessons and Carols 2018, the Huron Carol. I, of course, worked to find something on it, and swimming and skimming around in what I found, it appears to have, I was going to say a Native American bond, but it's actually a Native Canadian bond. And it's very old. It's over 350 years old. Knowing what you know, which is always a lot, expound on the Huron Carol for us and your process of selecting it for one of the most prestigious concerts of your season.
Well, as you stated, it is a Native carol. In fact, the solo in part is an Indian, so that part is true in exemplified in this setting. We have done numerous Danforth settings of carols in recent years. That's his true gift. This is the next in a long line of celebrated settings by Dan Forrest.
Does his style fit your ensemble? What?
Well, it does from the standpoint, especially when he does things with instruments, which we like to do. We like the chamber aspect of our ensemble with bringing in other instrumentalists to be with us. So this particular carol is written for a string quartet and two percussionists. We have a string quartet performing with us. This is a group of students at the university, which we've performed with for quite a few years. We're very happy to have them with us, a bridge string quartet. From that standpoint, yes, Dan he's taking a page out of a book of numerous other composers. John Rutter did this a great deal during his time, where he writes well-noted carols and arranges them for a small group of instruments, thus enabling choirs the size of ours to do them.
Written by, originally, a Jesuit priest, a Frenchman. I took French in high school, but for me to try to pronounce, I can do Jean and then de Brébeuf.
Very good.
He became a saint, by the way, and October 19th is his feast day. It's listed and attributed as being, to many people, the first Canadian carol. Methodists have retained it in their hymnal. So those are some trivial facts about the Huron Carol. Now, it is the title of your concert. Is it just one song and there are others, or is this something like a symphony with a bunch of movements?
No, it's a setting of one carol, a little longer than most, probably five and a half minutes. I've always been drawn to this carol. This is actually the second setting that I've commissioned during my career. It's a lovely carol, and I think Dan Forrest's treatment of it is quite striking.
We'll get back to the details about those concerts, which are coming up on the 14th and 15th in a moment. But we should, because we haven't talked to you in a while, brush up on the master singers. Tell us about, because you have one most every year. Sometimes they go 2 years. Tell us about this season's composer in residence.
We're pleased to be working this year with Elaine Hagenberg. She lives in Des Moines. She is a very talented rising star. She's receiving many commissions, many performances of her work. I just noted this week that concerts of her works were 15 of her choral works were performed. So she is receiving much acclaim. There are a number of choirs here in the Eau Claire area that are doing her work. There are two pieces this year that she has written for us. On the fall concert, we did a setting of the River's Song. That's a commission work, and it was a collaborative event. We're working with Max Garland. In looking at the text that Max came up with, Elaine decided to do a collaborative yet further with another poet to form what is the River Song. The charge to Max and to Elaine was to have a piece that would celebrate the beauty of the Chippewa Valley, the confluence of the two rivers, the opening of the Pablo Center. So that's how that piece came about. Like the Huron Carol, the piece is written for string quartet, piano, and SATB choir. And then on this Lesson and Carols concert, we're also doing a setting of a carol by Elaine, which is new. It's entitled Wexford Carol, an Irish carol for SATB Choir. The Bridge String Quartet is joining us, as well as an oboist, Wesley Baim, from the university. It's a collaboration with the Des Moines Choral Society. Elaine Hagenberg sings in the Des Moines Choral Society. Mm. She's a member of that choir, and she presented the following idea. The Des Moines Choral Society was commissioning her to write the choral arrangement of the Wexford Carol, and yet it would interest her to do an orchestration of the carol. Elaine's setting have included the string quartet, an oboist, and two percussionists.
Bringing up her abilities as a singer raises a curiosity. Is it mandatory for someone like Dan Forrest and your composer in residence, who write a lot of choral music, to be singers?
Well, I think your experience within the art form itself obviously increases your knowledge, your empathy, if you would, for the art. And so that's certainly true of the success of both Dan and Elaine. Elaine was a high school choral director in Des Moines. It's only this year, this current school year, that she's retired from that because she has become so wildly successful as a composer. Mm-hmm. She had to choose which way to go, and she chose to devote her time fully to being a composer.
Enjoying a visit from Dr. Gary Schwartzoff. He is music director of the Master Singers. Their Christmas concert this year, Lessons and Carols 2018, is the Huron Carol. Friday evening, the 14th of December, 7:30, and Saturday afternoon, the 15th, at 1. We'll give you location details and ticket details in a moment. While we're on the subject of general Master Singers excitement, I read that July of 2019, the new year, is a big opportunity for some members.
The UW Claire Alumni Choir, which is the name under which the Master Singers and other interested singers travel internationally, this is, I believe, the fourth international tour that we've had, will participate in the 75th anniversary of D-Day Choral Festival in Paris. I'm the conductor and artistic director for that concert. There are currently some 400 singers registered for that, involving some 14 groups across the United States.
That sounds unforgettable to me.
It is. Well, everything World War II has always been of great interest to me. We're very honored to be involved in this. The Greatest Generation has given the world so much. And, of course, this week we honor the 41st President of the United States, member of the Greatest Generation, served in World War II and became president.
Back to the Christmas concert, two performances I alluded to a bit earlier. Friday evening at 7:30, that's at First Congregational United Church of Christ, Eau Claire. Saturday at 1, it's at St. Charles Borromeo Church, Chippewa Falls. That's at 1 o'clock.
And for our friends in Minneapolis, we're doing a performance on Saturday, December 8th, at St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Minneapolis.
This Saturday. How do people get tickets other than just showing up at the door?
Tickets are available at Festival Foods, the three locations here in town. For the Friday, December 14th concert, they're available at First Congregational Church. And then on Saturday the 15th, they're available at St. Charles Borromeo. We would strongly encourage patrons, to, if they're coming on Friday night, to get tickets in advance. That concert is just about sold out. There are tickets available on Saturday. They could get them there. Or they're also available online. Fill out a form and we'll send them to you.
Congratulations on another thing I read, and that is the fact that you have 45 years under your belt as a music participant and educator. Does it seem like 45 or does it seem like 55?
Yes, it's a lot of rewarding experiences from early days of teaching high school for 15 years and then moving to UW-Eau Claire in 1991, spent 25 years here. In addition, I've had multiple church choirs across the Midwest and four different community choirs, two of which I've started.
Do you still sing?
The time never really allowed that to happen in my career. It isn't that I wouldn't have liked to. I mean, like you were asking.
You sing in the shower?
No. Like you were asking about what is the benefit for the standpoint of a composer being in the art form. I mean, I'm drawn to choral music as a singer. Having sung in the first choir of my church choir as a young boy with my aunt, the choral director, would love to have continued, but goodness, during those first 42 years of the experience, I had five choirs I was conducting. There just isn't enough hours in the day to yet go beyond that.
Oh. can you compose? Can you compose vocal music?
My wife asks me that question regularly. Shouldn't you be writing some music?
And your answer is?
I don't think it's my calling. I have arranged some things. Yeah. I have arrangements. Okay. They're not published. I do have a choral series with a music publisher featuring a number of talented composers, arrangers of our day, but I've never felt my gift was that of an arranger or composer.
That may change, though. Huh?
Who knows what tomorrow brings?
We'll leave people with that bit of wisdom. Gary, thanks.
Thank you.
Bit of an hors d'oeuvre there for you of the Huron Carol. You want to hear more? You go hear the Master Singers in concert. And if you want more information on them and their schedules, themastersingers.net is their website. Thank you, Gary. Spectrum memo for you at the Heide Center in Chippewa Falls. Today, if you're listening Thursday, it's the Christmas Craft Fair beginning at 10 a.m. featuring the Holiday Tea at 2, Christmas Sing-Along at 6:30. Next Wednesday and Thursday, the 12th and 13th, a concert of traditional carols and hymns with a 6 p.m. buffet and show at 7:30. CVCA.net is the website to get all you need to know. In It Together presents Matt and Susie's Christmas Soiree Saturday evening at 7 at the River Prairie Center in Altoona. It's music, art, and more. Tickets online at beinit.org. The Widespot PAC presents the holiday edition of Goin' Coastal, the variety show, Saturday and Sunday, December 15th and 16th, starting at 7 p.m. Lineup details and tickets online at widespot.org. We'll be talking about that some more on next week's show. In addition to a new West Wisconsin Film Festival, preparing for a first exciting year in 2019, and of course, always more on Spectrum West. Thanks, Rachel, Dean, and Kate, for providing logistical support. Thank you for helping WPR continue the entertainment and information through participation in our current membership drive, the winter one. It's great to have you as partners. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. See you next week.